Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman.
Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast, Season 2, Episode 6. Sorry for the delay in getting this out this week. I normally try and get this out on a Tuesday, but I was slightly delayed. This week I'll be talking about a German autodidactic who was one of the great thinkers of the 17th and 18th century and is known as the last universal genius. He made deep and important contributions to the field of metaphysics, epistemology, logic, philosophy of religion, as well as mathematics, physics, geology, jurisprudence, and history. Who is this? It's Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz, a prominent German polymath and one of the most important logicians, mathematicians, and natural philosophers of the Enlightenment. A contemporary, Denis Diderot, an 18th century French atheist and materialist, said, "When one compares the talents one has with those of Leibniz, one is tempted to throw away one's book and go die quietly in the dark of some forgotten corner." As a representative of the 17th century tradition of rationalism, Leibniz developed, as his most prominent accomplishment, the ideas of differential and integral calculus, independently of Isaac Newton's contemporaneous developments. Mathematical works have consistently favored Leibniz notation as the conventional expression of calculus. He became one of the most prolific inventors in the field of mechanical calculators. While working on adding automatic multiplication and division to Pascal's calculator, he was the first to describe the pinwheel calculator in 1685, and invented the Leibniz wheel, used in a device called the arithmeter, the first mass-produced mechanical calculator. He also refined the binary number system, which is the foundation of nearly all digital, electronic, solid-state, and discrete logic computers, including the von Neumann machine, which is the standard design paradigm, or computer architecture, followed from the second half of the 20th century and into the 21st. Leibniz made major contributions to physics and technology and anticipated notions that surfaced much later in philosophy, probability theory, biology, medicine, geology, psychology, linguistics, and computer science. He wrote works on philosophy, politics, law, ethics, theology, and history. He wrote in several languages, primarily in Latin, French, and German, but also in English, Italian, and Dutch. Leibniz was born in Liebsen on July 1st, 1646, 2 years prior to the end of the Thirty Years' War, which had ravaged Central Europe. His father, Frederick Leibniz, was a jurist and professor of moral philosophy at the University of Leipzig, and his mother, Catherine Schnuck, the daughter of the professor of law. Leibniz's father died in 1652, and his subsequent education was directed by his mother, uncle, and, according to his own reports, himself. He was given access to his father's extensive library at a young age and proceeded to pore over its contents, particularly the volumes of ancient history and the church fathers. His father's library enabled him to study a wide variety of advanced philosophical and theological works, ones he would not otherwise have been able to read until his college years. Access to his father's library, largely written in Latin, also led to his proficiency in Latin, which he achieved by the age of 12. While young, Leibniz immersed himself in history, poetry, mathematics, and other subjects, gaining knowledge in many different fields. At the age of 7, Leibniz entered the Nikolai School in Leipzig. Although he was taught Latin at elementary school, Leibniz had already taught himself far more advanced Latin and some Greek. As he progressed through school, he was taught Aristotle's logic and the theory of categorization of knowledge. Leibniz was clearly not satisfied with Aristotle's system and began to develop his own ideas on how to improve it. In later life, he recalled that this was the time he was trying to find orderings on logical truths, which, although he did not know it at the time, were the ideas behind rigorous mathematical proofs. In 1661, at the age of 14, Leibniz entered the University of Leipzig. It may sound today as if this were truly exceptional and an early age for someone to enter university, but it's fair to say by the standards of the time, although he was quite young, there would be others of a similar age. He studied philosophy, which was well taught at the University of Leipzig, and mathematics, which was very poorly taught. Among other topics which were included in this two-year general degree course were rhetoric, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew. He graduated with a bachelor's degree in 1663, and then went to Jena to spend the summer term. At Jena, the professor of mathematics was Ernhard Weigl. But Weigl was a philosopher, and through him, Leibniz began to understand the importance of the method of mathematical proof for subjects such as logic and philosophy. Weigl believed that the number was a fundamental concept of the universe, and his ideas were to have a considerable influence on Leibniz. By October of 1663, Leibniz was back in Leipzig, starting his studies toward a doctorate in law. He was awarded his master's degree in philosophy for a dissertation which combined aspects of philosophy and law, studying relationships in these subjects with mathematical ideas, which he had learned from Weigl. A few days after Leibniz presented his dissertation, his mother died. Despite his growing reputation and acknowledged scholarship, Leibniz was refused the doctorate in law at Leipzig. It's a little unclear why this happened, but Leibniz was not prepared to accept any delay, and he went immediately to the University of Altdorf, where he received a doctorate in law in February of 1667. Leibniz dedicated his life to serving two German families, which were very important in the society at the time. He proposed a plan to revitalize and protect German-speaking countries after the devastation and opportunistic situation left by the Thirty Years' War. Although the elector listened to this plan with reservation, Leibniz was summoned to Paris to explain the details of the plan. In the end, this plan wasn't carried out, but it was the beginning of the Parisian stay for Leibniz, which lasted for years. This stay in Paris allowed Leibniz to contact several well-known personalities in the field of science and philosophy. And having been in contact with these specialists, he realizes that he needed to expand his areas of knowledge. Leibniz decided to follow a self-education program. This program had excellent results, discovering elements of great importance in translucence, such as his investigations linked to the infinite series in his own version of differential calculus. The reason why Leibniz was summoned to Paris did not take place, and Leibniz was sent to London for a diplomatic mission to the government of England. During these years, he took the opportunity to present to the Royal Society an invention he had been developing since 1670. It was a tool through which it was possible to make calculations in the field of arithmetic. After witnessing the operation of this machine, the members of the Royal Society appointed him as an external member. While in London, he learned that the elector, for whom he had been working, had died, and Leibniz had to find another occupation. He began working as a private justice counselor for the House of Brunswick. While Leibniz dedicated himself to providing his services to the House of Brunswick, they allowed him to develop his studies and inventions, which were linked to the obligations directly related to the family. Then, in 1674, Leibniz began to develop the concept of calculus. 2 years later, in 1676, he'd already developed a system which was coherent and saw the light of day in 1684. 1682 and 1692 were very important years for Leibniz, as his documents were published in the field of mathematics. During the decades of the 1700s, the Scottish mathematician John Keel indicated that Leibniz had plagiarized Isaac Newton in relation to the concept of calculus. This accusation took place in an article written by Keel for the Royal Society. The institution then carried out an extremely detailed research on both scientists to determine who had been the author of this discovery. It was eventually determined that Newton was first to discover calculus, but Leibniz was the first to publish his dissertations. Today, historians believe both men made the discoveries completely independently, and both are credited with the invention of calculus. The last part of Leibniz's life was plagued by this controversy. In 1714, George Louis of Hanover became King George I of Great Britain. Leibniz had a lot to do with this appointment, but George I was adverse toward him. Leibniz died in Hanover on November 14, 1716. He was 70 years old. He had never married, and his funeral was only attended by his personal secretary. George I did not attend his funeral, which shows the separation between the two men. What can we take away from Leibniz? Well, he had two periods of intense self-learning, the first as a child in his father's library, and the second from 1672 in Paris. Leibniz studied mathematics and physics under Christian Huygens, a Dutch scientist, in 1772, and it was Huygens who encouraged him to read and create an extensive reading list. This list included many famous mathematicians such as Pascal and Descartes. In both of these periods, he read extensively. Like many of my previous podcasts about famous autodidactics, reading was a cornerstone for Leibniz as well. Ray Bradbury, a writer I featured recently, called the library his college. For Leibniz, reading was a critical method for extending his knowledge, and he didn't read in just a single area of knowledge. He read extensively in all areas he was interested in. So in this podcast, let's focus on becoming more prolific readers. If you're listening to this, then you're probably already doing a lot of study, and like most people, you're short of time. Using what we know about Leibniz and his two periods of extensive study, let me propose some things to help you become a voracious reader. First, make a list of books to read. Leibniz started both of his periods of his self-study with reading lists. The first was his intention to read all of the books in his father's library. You can picture him as a young child entering the room, pulling a book from the topmost left shelf, and working his way around the room book by book. In the second period, he was given a list to start with by his friend and mentor. It doesn't really matter how you get your starting list. You'll come across other books as you read as well, or you might find a topic mentioned in one book which leads to another set of books. But the trick is to have a list of books that you're going to be reading next, and from your starting list, just keep adding more and more books as they appear on your radar. Set a reading goal. Having a target for how many books you'll read and how many chapters or pages per day. But most importantly, set a daily goal. So, for example, 20 or 30 pages a day. Always have a book handy. And like the famous advert says, don't leave home without it. Always have something to read with you. I know someone who used to rip books into 20-page sections and then carry around the 20-page sections to read in his pocket. Now, personally, I don't think I could bring myself to destroy a book like that, but it worked for him, and he did read all the time. In addition to books, try audiobooks. I used to listen to audiobooks while driving from the Great Course Company. It's a very good way to read a book while listening and driving alone. You're not wasting any of your time. Make reading a priority. You need to put reading in a higher category than other things you might be doing now. So park the TV or the Xbox, stop the Instagram, and read instead. Set a deadline for each book. If you don't set a deadline for completion of your book, there isn't a sense of urgency, and when something isn't urgent, you tend to procrastinate, and your books get left on the shelf untouched and unread. So set a deadline to avoid this problem. You can set a general deadline to complete any book you read in 2 weeks, for example. Also, read in layers. For non-fiction books, you may want to read the contents, skim the headers, look through the sections first. You can find more information about this procedure in my previous podcast, Season 1, Episode 7, Textbook Study Methods, and I'll put a link in the show notes. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoy the show. Please give a rating on the platform which you're using to listen to this podcast, and share the podcast with friends and family who might be interested. Also, please feel free to email me at rick@autodidactic.info or leave feedback on the website autodidactic.info. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving a donation via PayPal. Thank you very much, and see you again next time. We'll be right back.